papermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now, you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery. She wanted money to buy a new fur coat.
The Media Project gives you a half-hour commentary and analysis and some thinking on what's going on in newsrooms from some veteran newsroom managers, and we are thankful that you are here joining us. I'm Rex Smith, formerly editor of the Times Union, now creating the Upstate American, and I have my colleagues here in the studio with me. Judy Patrick is here, formerly editor of the Daily Gazette, now a vice president of the New York Press Association.
I am so happy to be here.
You are happy.
Oh, yeah. Excited, optimistic. Go media.
Barbara Lombardo, are you happy? Barbara is the former editor of the Saratogian and the Record of Troy.
I want what Judy's having.
Yeah, there we go. Get some of that stuff. And our producer, Dave Gossina, morning host on WAMC, is here. Sir.
To have a panelist like Judy Patrick every week would be the greatest media project ever. Don't count on it.
You can't count on it. You may end up with people who are not as well informed. You know, there's a lot of talk these days. That is, there's a lot of the media that is about talking. And one of those places that a lot of people like to tune into is Morning Joe. Let's just talk for a moment about that, because there has been criticism of the hosts, Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski, the married couple who do this talk show on MSNBC in the mornings, news talk, we can call it, because after being quite harshly critical of Donald Trump during the campaign, and he being very critical of them, let's be very clear, in very personal terms, they went down to Mar-a-Lago and had a little time for, let's say, some fence mending, which has prompted some of their viewers to complain. Is this much ado about nothing?
Man, the criticism has rained down on them.
Yeah.
Woof. I've had a few days to think about this, because when they said that they had gone to Mar-a-Lago and met with Donald Trump on background and trying to explain this to us as if they were journalists, a reporter working on a story. And let's be clear, on background means you talk to someone and then you report it, but you just don't identify them. They reported nothing out of their meeting. Let's be clear. This was not a journalistic fact-finding mission. This was groveling. And I think that's the issue for so many people, it was the appearance. They were leading the charge. The Morning Joe program is a bubble. It's democracy is going to die. You know, they portrayed the worst aspects of Trump for the last 7 or 8 years. The great Eric Wemple, the media critic for the Washington Post, has a wonderful column where he gives you 5 reasons or 5 suggestions for dealing with this. Start the morning by reading a newspaper. 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 And start the morning by reading a newspaper.
Self-serving alarm.
Well, where else would people get news?
Oh, maybe from the broadcasters as well. Yep. Just tune into news and pay attention to the news of verification.
Yep, the truth-based media.
Correct.
Which would include public radio. I don't think you get much news from commercial radio anywhere, do you?
Not much. In fact, it's faded and faded and faded, and much of it on commercial radio is leaning a little bit more to the right.
Yeah, to the extent that there is news there, mostly it's talk. But what about this, Barbara? Think about it. If you're Mika and Joe, and you want, because you're a broadcast outlet, to have access to the White House, wouldn't you try to moderate your relationship?
I have mixed feelings about it. It's clearly all about the ratings and the fear of dropped ratings. And I think it's naive to think that they or anybody else who goes down to Mar-a-Lago to kiss the ring is doing any fence mending or doing anything constructive by going down there. And, you know, there's a power thing, too. When you want to meet with somebody, do you go down to their turf? Or do you go to neutral location, or they come up to your turf, as if, you know, he would ever do that? So it shows you who's in charge in this interaction. I was trying to remember, you guys can help me, when wasn't there during the first Trump administration that Marty Baron and his publisher at the Washington Post had kind of a secret meeting with yes. Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And I remember Marty Baron kind of regretting that whole interaction. Nothing was reported from that, although the Washington Post is or has been a very legitimate news operation. So that's different than the Morning Joe show. But that happens where the people in charge of important media outlets or news organizations want to establish some kind of a dialogue, at least with the people in charge.
And shouldn't you, David?
Well, you should always try to gain the access, but how do you go about it? With a secret meeting? And my real concern is always the motivation. So, yeah, ratings is one thing, but what about the fact that we've learned that Comcast is going to spin off the cable channels, including MSNBC and CNBC? What are those shows going to do that were so far to the left if the winds of change say we need to be a little bit more centered or moderated in our opinion? They're in a commercial operation that is watching out for the bottom line. That's what I take from this. And they want to continue to be on the air. They were friendly with them in the beginning. Then they had a falling out. Now they're making up again. Yeah. Just in time.
Bear in mind that Scarborough is a former Republican member of Congress.
Correct.
Before he started this TV show, but he is part of the Republican Party that now virtually doesn't exist because it has become the Trumpist Party. But, you know, it's an interesting notion. We are facing what the CEO of NPR, Catherine Marr, called the hostile environment ahead for journalism. And she said we're likely to face scrutiny, investigation, and renewed pushes to eliminate federal funding for public media. I think that we are in a very difficult time for news media going forward as a result of the election of Donald Trump and the elevation of certain people into positions of leadership, people who will have the capacity to make life very difficult.
And let me just throw something out there, and that is what we saw with Roe v. Wade, that Republicans always wanted to get rid of it so many years, and it was sort of seen as settled law, and it's never going to happen. Then Trump comes in, and it happens. We've seen since NPR was created during the Nixon administration, we've heard calls to pull the funding, that it's a liberal biased organization. Is this now the time that NPR actually has its funding taken away?
I would predict it is. I think that federal subsidy for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting is probably going to go away.
Mm-hmm. I believe you, Rex.
Because it is just so easy a target. It is such a minuscule amount of money in the scope of the $3 trillion that Elon Musk, who is the president-elect, oh, I'm sorry, he's not the president-elect.
He's the president assistant elect.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, the $3 trillion that he says his department of...
the Department of Redundancy.
Government elimination is going to cut. But still, that tiny amount is, I'm sure, going to be an easy thing for them to get rid of. So if you support what public broadcasting does, folks, you need to actually put some dollars behind that support.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's where the rubber meets the road now. And if that's what it's going to come down to, I hope, I pray that a place like WAMC, because we have such a loyal listenership, would be able to make it through that storm.
Well, the media is getting assailed at a time, potentially from the federal government, in terms of these harsh restrictions on how we operate and potential efforts to quell what we do. And at the other end of the spectrum, increasingly distrust of us. And in large part fueled by people in leadership positions who make people not trust legacy news media. So we're fighting this war on two fronts. We need to rebuild the trust people have in us as institutions, including public radio. I think that they, too, have seen an erosion of support, or people who think that they're too liberal, for example.
But even though one media person from Fox News after the other is making its way into politics right now.
Why? It's really the Fox administration, isn't it? I mean, there's just...
In many ways, you're seeing that.
Yeah. If they get confirmed, as we speak, it's not clear that the nominee for Secretary of Defense is going to...
Hegseth.
Yeah, is going to make it. And the third element attacking the media, of course.
The third front?
The third front is, in fact, of course, the business side, where digital advertising is supplanting what had been print advertising for print. And even in the realm of digital advertising, which is now 2/3 of all advertising dollars go to digital, that incorporates everything from outdoor to print and so on. 2/3 is now digital, and 2/3 of the digital advertising dollars spent in the United States go to the four major outlets, to Alphabet, Meta, Amazon, and Microsoft. So those are the ones who get two-thirds of all the digital advertising dollars, and there is just not any money left over to support the traditional media sources. So in the face of that comes Donald Trump with ways that he really could make a difference. We've been talking about electronic. I mean, there could be an assault by his newly named chair of the FCC on the broadcast licenses, right?
No question about it. I brought it up on the last show that we've got to watch these appointments. Now, on the CPB board, the Democrats are getting their picks in there before the Trump administration comes in. That's valuable because that's the money, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. So we've got a little bit of a buffer there, but I don't know how they hold on. They're going to be holding on for dear life when you've got the head of the FCC about to announce major, major changes, is my guess, coming in January.
The second way that Trump could affect journalism is he could get the Justice Department to go after reporters' anonymous sources. And that would have quite a chilling effect on anybody who wants to talk about how things are being done in the government. So it won't only hurt the news organizations, it will make sources generally, I think, less likely to come forward. If you're, let's say you're a source in state government who is willing to talk to an investigative reporter at the state capitol, you might be thinking you're not going to do that if you see people, if the news is filled with people in Washington getting arrested for that kind of thing.
You know, the first Trump administration was very leaky. If you remember, we were getting tons of information out of that administration by people, I don't know who they were, but they were anonymous leakers. This time around, I think he learned his lesson, and he is getting definite loyalists into his cabinet, into positions of power, into places where they will know things that they're not going to be talking.
Right. I think that makes a big difference this time around, and it really is going to have a trickle-down effect on all levels of news coverage, where reporters are going to have a harder time getting people to talk to them, and that's going to affect whatever news coverage is left.
And what is that, really? The big thing, and we talked about it last week, self-censorship, this chilling of the press. We can read the tea leaves. The sources can read it. They'll know what's at stake. And that is really going to damage the ability of the press to gain access, to get the stories out there, to find the leaks, because everyone will know they'll be in big trouble if they do.
Yeah. If, in fact, he may make a test case, I would not be at all surprised if the Justice Department doesn't try to make a test case on the Sedition Act, trying to destabilize government security. There could be a prosecution that, well, it might not succeed, but in the amount of time and effort and money it takes to defend oneself on that kind of a front, meanwhile, you've really stopped a lot of this from happening, from going forward.
Well, you are scaring us. Rex, thanks a lot. But, you know, let's keep in mind that every reporter I know, there's nothing that motivates them more than telling them not to write a story, you know, and editors. Let's, you know, so
what about
that.
Their bosses?
Yeah, well, you know, typically their bosses, too, the editors will say, you don't want me to write that? Let's look into that a little bit more. So I'm hopeful that that will prevail at least to some extent over the next 4 years.
What about the Press Act?
Oh, the Press Act. Now, what is that acronym? Yeah, the Press Act is actually...
You try to pronounce it, Rex.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
I got the line right here, Rex. The Press Act would bar the federal government from using subpoenas, search warrants, or other compulsory actions against journalists to force the disclosure of information identifying confidential sources, as well as other news-gathering records, except in very limited circumstances. We'll have to find out what those are.
Well, the difficulty is that is not going to get through a Republican-led Senate, and so the question is, will Chuck Schumer bring that to the floor? This has passed the House a couple of times.
Yes.
And there are conservative supporters, because actually a lot of people could say that much of the right-wing media needs this kind of protection as well. It's not as though Democratic administrations haven't tried to ferret out leakers. But will Chuck Schumer bring it to the floor? I think, you know, obviously his priority in the little remaining time that they have Democratic control of the Senate is to confirm judges. But this could be important in the sense of the watchdog role over the incoming administration.
So are there news organizations right now lobbying Chuck Schumer, Rex?
There are organizations representing news media. You know, you don't have the editor of the Washington Post calling up Chuck Schumer, but you certainly would have Freedom of the Press organizations, and I would hope organizations such as the News Media Alliance trying to do what they can, and friends of the media in civil liberties organizations, for example.
And I think it's important for the media to cover this as an issue. And we're stuck between a rock and a hard place on that, too, because it sounds like we are self-serving and we're trying to just defend ourselves and we're concerned about our own well-being. Well, our well-being is the
country's well-being.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, can I just say that there's a lot of time between now and January 20th. Don't, you know, work 5 days a week. Maybe work over the weekend. If you don't tell me you're too busy to get this done. Prioritize. I know there's a lot of judgeships you want to approve, but typically the Senate goes home on Thursday. Work on Friday. Work through the weekend. There's a lot of time. Get it done. I mean, don't use the excuse, oh, I don't have enough time. I mean, you've had, I think this has been laying around for 5, 6, 7 years. So this is really important, and get it done.
The judgeships are important too, and we are reporting that. And that's how we, in the legacy media, is reporting. That's how we know about it. But it is curious that, you know, now we're on deadline and they are like, oh my God, we got to get these judges in.
Yeah, Judy, they're... Mike Johnson's on the line. He wants to hear more about your
plan. Well, you know what? These senators are just like reporters. They wait until the last minute. They push that deadline to the very end, and then they make us all nervous.
But there is no impetus for this to happen other than these pressure groups. That is, the general public is not going to be in support of this. Judy alluded earlier to the erosion of public support for the media. When I was a young reporter, in the aftermath of Watergate, when people felt that the, you know, we had lionized Woodward and Bernstein, and that's what drove some of us into journalism. We thought, look at the impact you can have as a journalist. But at that time, 72% of Americans told Gallup pollsters that they had a great deal or a fair amount of trust in the mass media. 72%. This last year, less than one third of the country said they had a great deal or a fair amount of trust. Another third said they had not very much trust, and the rest said none at all. So that is where trust in the media has so eroded that there is not a groundswell of public support for this kind of legislation.
How is it going to get better when we've got artificial intelligence now entering the fray and we're going to begin to see deep fakes? We're already seeing it. How is it going to not create more distance from the press and the truth?
Listeners, send us an email.
Good point. media@wamc.org is how you can offer your thoughts here. media@wamc.org, please. And this is, by the way, if you're just tuning in, the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. That guy you just heard was David Gustina. Barbara Lombardo was just there. Judy Patrick and I'm Rex Smith, and we are your media projectors, talking about what is going on and what is not going on and how we're going to get around things. To David's point about artificial intelligence, you know, Judy and I are part of something called the New York Fair Trial Free Press Conference, and we just had a colloquium at Albany Law School this past week where we talked about the issue of artificial intelligence with a very interesting scenario. What happens if there is a news incident and a news organization decides to use AI to recreate the incident, to in effect have a video that looks so real that people begin to share it thinking that it is real, and that in fact the AI version could be defamatory? Can you sue for libel artificial intelligence? Can artificial intelligence have actual malice? It's a really interesting scenario.
It is a brave new world. We don't know how these questions are going to be answered. And in that scenario, all I could picture was in very, very, very small letters in the bottom corner of that video, it says AI generated.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. One of the things I walked away from the afternoon was the idea that AI is essentially just another tool, just like photographs, just like videos, just like fingerprints. And it's something the justice system has to vet, has to work through and be aware of as they're going forward in true lawyerly fashion. They take such a practical step-by-step approach to these things. And I think they were not intimidated by the prospect of AI, but they recognized the fast pace at which it was being implemented in our society.
I still think you need human beings. You really need human beings. If you look at just computers and hacking, the good creators are always hacked into by the bad ones, right? They always figure a way around it. But you can't find your way around a human being who's trying to tell the truth.
Well, in finding,
you've got to have people.
Sorry, in finding accountability, there's a human being who initiates that first distribution of the AI-generated content. And wouldn't that person and or their organization be the person that you would go after?
I think generally that is the thought. Yeah, that there's your libel source.
That seems cut and dried. Is it?
Well, you know, but I think to David's point, we're going to have to figure out how to deal with this. But that has always been the case with new technology that is challenging. You know, I remember when newspapers started, this is how old I am, started publishing color photographs. You remember when black and white was the only thing that we printed? And one of my colleagues was bemoaning the fact that I was the editor of a little tiny rural newspaper, and we had a barn fire photograph on the front page. Well, you know, barn fires are quite dramatic because
there's
a lot of tinder.
Look at that barn fire.
Look at that barn fire. But there's no loss of life. There's loss of hay and structure. And so he said, we wouldn't have had that fire on the front page if it weren't for color. And I said, yeah, that's right. But we do have color, and it draws readers. And
color is the reality of most human beings' experience.
It is the way we see things, not dogs.
There were similar issues with Photoshop when that first came up, and that things could be Photoshopped, and that could be fake news, not enhanced news. Just that AI now has dramatically increased that so exponentially.
There is, of course, software that can detect Photoshopped images. Actually, the University of Albany is a place that has significant research on that particular technology, how to detect when images have been altered. And as that becomes less expensive and more easy to distribute, I think that we will see that being applied in the same way that professors now deploy software to detect plagiarism.
Let's just hope it's so real time that we see it. Let's say I come in the morning and there's a piece on the AP wire, but it's already flagged because it says this is an AI generated thing. Don't use it. It's not quite the truth.
The problem is exacerbated, though, when you have a lot of social media platforms which no longer moderate, where you have, in fact, flagrant lies being forwarded by the owner of X, the largest of those sharing platforms. Elon Musk is eagerly distributing falsehoods. And so how do you even begin to counter that?
We haven't even mentioned the social influencers, right?
Yeah.
Nearly 40% of young Americans get their news from influencers, and many of them lean to the right, according to a new study.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. It's sort of like a key alternative to traditional outlets. The influencers, though, don't have at all the standards of journalism. There is no commitment to truth-telling, no transparency of where information comes from, certainly no commitment to minimizing harm. All of those things are part of the code of ethics that we have followed as journalists, and you don't see that in the influencers.
But it's harder to do that work when people either don't even know those values exist in journalism or don't believe that you're following those values.
I saw that CNN article that talked about this Pew Research Center study that we're talking about with the influencers, and it made me wonder whether part of what we have to do in the media is hire people who can serve the role as influencers, as credible journalistic influencers, and get out there. I don't know if we're doing that.
I'm sorry, but not to say I told you so, but you know, a couple of years ago, I remember having this conversation about how we need to adapt to TikTok. We all need to be using Instagram in our distribution. It's hard to get great investigative reporting across that way, but we need to really be sure that our newsrooms are staffed with people who have storytelling skills in all of the media where people are going. And that may require a lot of adjustment to the skill set that we're looking for.
I could see a TikTok right now. We have these wildfires going on around us in the capital region of New York, into the Berkshires, down into the Hudson Valley, Catskill areas, even into New York City in parts. So, you know, you could see a little TikTok video with a fire and then some facts about what's happening. Maybe roads are closed here, that kind of thing, in a very short continuing video on TikTok.
Harder to do it for accountability reporting, where you're like keeping track of the spending excesses of one place or another in government.
But it can tease you into a story.
Yes.
Maybe somebody links to, maybe they click a link.
Mm-hmm. You show somebody with their hand in the cookie jar. Read more.
Right. There are definitely ways to get the news to people besides making them read a 30-inch story.
Because you can't make them.
You can't make them read a 30-inch story. You
and
can read it to them and they can zone out. Yeah, we just need to get there. And that is our challenge. I mean, the news media has lagged behind. We've been stuck on this horse that we need them to read us. And maybe that is that is our fault and not so much the poor people who are ignorant of what's going on.
You know, meanwhile, the point that David made earlier about dispersion of some of the assets of Comcast, that is MSNBC and CNBC being sold off, you wonder about this. Is this a business proposition or is this Comcast, which owns NBC and is holding on to NBC Universal, are they trying to get rid of the problematic assets? Is this a peremptory move to try to not displease the incoming administration? And if that's the case, how are we governing ourselves? The editor-in-chief of Scientific American, which, by the way, is the oldest continuously published magazine in the United States, has resigned under pressure because in a post right after the election, she, on Blue Sky, Judy's favorite new platform, she described Trump as bigoted and his supporters as fascists. So,
in her position, that was not the right thing to do. Yeah. Cooler heads needed to prevail.
Yeah, I think it's true that we all need to think about that. You know, you can be right and wrong at once, that she is not inaccurate, maybe, in making this assessment, but it's wrong for a person who is at the head of what's essentially a journalistic enterprise to make those kinds of judgments publicly.
I found it incredibly liberating when I was no longer with the newspapers to be able to express my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. And this also speaks to the need for media companies to have social media policies to give people guidance about what they can and cannot do on social media, because without that, this kind of thing will happen and people in important positions lose their jobs. Although my argument is she should have known better.
She should have known better. Of course. She's a veteran journalist. She should have known better. So we're sorry about that. But she decided to move on from her position, the president of the company said. Yeah, I guess she did.
She'll spend more time with her family.
There we go. Absolutely. She said she'll go bird watching, which is a good thing for a scientist. All right. That is the time we have for this. That was David Gustina, our producer, to whom we're grateful. David, thank you always for this. And thanks for hopping onto a chair there in front of the microphone. Barbara Lombardo.
You're lucky to have me.
We are. We always have been. Barbara Lombardo has been here. Judy Patrick. I'm Rex Smith. And we are grateful to you for joining us today. We hope you come back again next week for The Media Project.
When they know they've got a people's fight to wage, ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild.
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include former Times Union editor and current Upstate American Substack columnist Rex Smith, Judy Patrick, Vice President for Editorial Development for the New York Press Association and former editor of the Daily Gazette, and Barbara Lombardo, adjunct professor at the University at Albany and former editor of the Saratogian. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
Circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.